talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, statewide on Civic Media. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits, and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. We're going right to the front lines of history in the making. A lot of places we could start, but I'll tell you where we're going to start. And that is with Kyrsten Sinema jumping ship, turned her back on the Democratic Party. It's been discussed all day by a lot of different commentators. I want to give you a slightly different perspective and take a look at the deeper facts on this. And I think that in the long run, this may actually help the Democratic Party. Kyrsten Sinema had stabbed the party a number of times. The one that infuriated me the most, and it also included Manchin, Joe Manchin, was when we put in the Voting Rights Act, and the Voting Rights Act passed the House, H.R. 1, and Pelosi had control of the House then. Now, of course, it looks like, well, the Republicans, but it looks like it's either Kevin McCarthy or somebody of that ilk. And the Senate, it was filibustered. SB 1 was filibustered by Moskowitz. So Schumer proposed to his caucus, here's a paradox of the filibuster. To overcome the filibuster, it takes 60 votes. And if it's a 50-50 Senate, you need 50, you have 50 Democrats, you need 10 Republicans. You're not going to get them. You're not going to get them. But one of the anomalies about that process is that to get rid of the filibuster for an individual piece of legislation, or totally, it only takes 51 votes. So 51 votes can get rid of the requirement to have 60 votes. We can explain that in a future segment. But in any event, all it required was the cooperation of Sinema and Manchin. And the Voting Rights Act would have taken care of 99% of the voting fraud that the Republicans have imposed on this country. It would get rid of gerrymandering. They would have required fair maps for federal elections in all states. It would have standardized early voting, maybe not giving everybody what they wanted in some states, but say a couple of weeks of early voting. It would have standardized absentee voting by mail, absentee voting in person. It would have gotten rid of any criminal consequences for voting, like they've done in Texas, where if you pass, you break the line of sight of one of the thugs in the Republican Party that's now permitted to monitor the election and harass voters, it's a crime. None of that. It would standardize who can observe the elections, where they would be. It would standardize things like in Georgia, where can you offer people in line something of value? And the answer is you can't give them money. Of course not. A pregnant woman is standing there in the sun for a couple of hours. Can you give her water? Absolutely. Or food? Yes. Yes. It would have standardized all of that. Standardized the number of voting machines that you needed per 1,000 people. So you wouldn't have the Republicans saying that Phoenix would get one voting machine and Elkhorn, Arizona, Rattlesnake, Arizona with five people would get one voting machine, that kind of thing. We standardize all this. It's a no-brainer, and it had the support of about 70% of the American people in polls. But Manchin and Sinema refused to do it, and I wouldn't support either one of them, quite frankly, for that reason alone. I don't care. The other issues they can deal with, as long as you have fair maps and fair elections. And the other thing it would do, you know, the independent state legislature theory that the Supreme Court and Moore v. Harper may try to sneak in on us and take away your ability to vote for president. The section of the Constitution that says the legislature can pick the electors and do some of this other stuff on elections says, unless Congress rules otherwise, All he had to do is do it in Congress. Takes out all of this. Manchin Sinema had an historical ability to do that. We had the House and the Senate and the presidency. There's fraud going on in elections, and they didn't do it. So I would never support her. And here's what happened. Down in Arizona, she went sniffing around, sniffing like a dog on a log, looking for support. And she went to all the county parties, and they told her, get out of here. Get out of here. There's a guy named Ruben Gallego, who's a congressman down there, and he's running. He's already running. I've already gotten solicitations to contribute to his campaign by email. And he has been criticizing Sinema, and he's setting up a primary. And she knew she would lose to Ruben Gallego. He's already running. Now, this is not just an ordinary politician. Grew up in Chicago, raised by a single mother. His mother was from Colombia, his father, Mexico. He was a hardworking guy, smart guy, got a scholarship to Harvard. He got out. He didn't just decide to go and do something on Wall Street. He went in the Marine Corps. He went in the Marine Corps, and then he went to Iraq in combat. And now he's come out, and he's a congressman from Arizona. He would have beaten Kyrsten Sinema. She knew it, and what she is doing is running as an independent in the following hope. The Republicans down in Arizona are a nutjob party, and I'm not saying that lightly or to insult. They don't have mainstream people. They have Blake Masters and Carrie Lake, and one of them will run against Sinema. Now, Blake Masters is Peter Thiel's Thiel, that eccentric billionaire, the real weirdo. He's his man. He's basically his boy. And Carrie Lake is flat out crazy. Carrie Lake is still contesting the election and will do it even after Katie Hobbs is sworn in. And everybody's laughing at her. She's nuts. I don't think that they're going to get a lot of votes. They're not going to get like the normal Republican vote. I think Ruben Gallego is going to get overwhelming Democratic and independent support and some moderate Republicans. They like a guy who served in the Marine Corps in combat. They like a guy who pulled himself up by his bootstraps. And he's a very, very decent guy. And Kyrsten Sinema is going to be essentially intellectually homeless. You know, what does she believe in? She believes in Kyrsten Sinema having power and somehow getting in and getting a salary. That's what she believes in. The other thing that set a lot of people off, to me, the voting rights issue was the key. But there was a chance in the tax bill to get rid of the hedge fund rule that says they don't have to pay income taxes. And I'm talking hedge funds, where people are making, in some cases, billions a year, in other cases, making hundreds of million a year. Because they had their lobbyists go down to Washington and have Congress say, okay, what they get is not income, it's carried interest. Carried interest is taxed like capital gains, about half of income tax. Now, carried interest was a theory that is used by oil companies and paper companies that if you, for instance, plant a lot of trees, you got to wait 20 years for them to realize an income. And if you drill for oil, you might drill 100 times and have 99 dry holes and one gusher. And the idea was that their income is called carried interest because they take risk. A hedge fund operator doesn't take any risk. And she stabbed us on carried interest. And she sucked on to everything that they said on Wall Street. And we've always talked about getting rid of that loophole. We didn't do it. We're going to the lines. Joanna Madison, my friend. Thanks for calling Western Mind today, Joanne.
Thank you for your tremendous shows lately. I've been grading papers, so I haven't been able to call in, but I'm taking a break. And I'm calling in about unionization in the United States, which is just taking off in a way I'm delighted about and surprised about. And very specific thing. I teach at the university, and in the UFC, University of California conglomerate, they've got 48,000 strikers. They've been striking for the last couple of months. And if you listen to CNN or MSNBC, there's no mention of it. There's not even a mention of it. And, of course, the New York Times went on strike yesterday, 24-hour strike. And I'm thinking, what gives? I mean, 48, just a nutshell. I know you have so much to say, but just a nutshell.
Right.
U of C, 48,000 workers, and people's exams are tied up. That gets to my heart because I know how students rely on their education and all of that. So again, for the the networks not to cover it. Now I know this station covers unionization very well, but the world isn't. And I'm wondering how the corporate media is dealing with all of this. So thank you so much for not being corporate and being honest and truthful. It's just an amazing. It's delightful.
Well, Joanne, I love having you call in. Thank you so much and for making the sacrifice to be able to take a break in your work to do it. I'll talk a little bit about that, and we're going to be going to a break shortly. I see the lines are alive. I see you on the lines. Do not hang up. I'll get back to you right after the break, but I want to just respond to Joanne briefly. It is true that the large media themselves don't want to be struck, okay? New York Times did have a brief strike. They don't want to be struck, and so they give it the silent treatment. Joe Biden just put aside $36 billion for the Central States Workers Fund for Teamsters, warehouse workers, and others who are getting cheated, and they will now have pensions through 2051, whereas they were going to be cheated of 60% of their pensions. The University of California people are on strike. You don't hear about it. Here in this state, you had Scott Walker put through Act 10, and they went through right to work, and they killed unionization in this state. I'm tired of this, and I am glad Joanne called in. We are going to stand up for strikers and workers, and we're not going to put up with silencing them. And you've called the right station when you want to hear about those issues. All right, I'm going to a break. That is a requirement. I have no choice. You're on the line. Do not hang up out there, and I'll get back to you right after the break, 844-967-2789, back after the break.
Backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Director. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going right to the lines. Cassandra Middleton, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's in your mind today, Cassandra?
Taking my call. Well, I just wanted to make a comment about Kristen Sinema and her antics. But before I do, I would like to give a shout out to Joanne, a fellow educator. I too am grading papers, and I know what that is like this time of year. But anyway, I wanted to comment about Sinema and. I recall watching a video of her, I believe it was on YouTube, and it was one of the young DACA students, and she was a young Hispanic female, and she was trying to have a conversation with Kristen Sinema about why she was not supporting legislation for DACA. And now I recently read somewhere that she wants to try and push through a immigration bill. And, you know, this is just incredibly opportunistic of her. And I believe the Democratic Party should not surrender to her threat. They should run a very strong primary challenger and also face her in the general election as well. The voters of Arizona, they really should have a choice if they want to have someone who can't be trusted or who really doesn't have any principles in office. That's all I have to say, and love your show, and I'll listen off air.
Thanks a lot, Cassandra. Good to hear from you. I love having you call in, too. And let me follow up on that, because both Cassandra and Joanna raised essential points. And this one on Kyrsten Sinema, here's the deal. Ruben Gallego is running, and look him up. Ruben Gallego, Marine Corps veteran, combat veteran in Iraq, Democrat, and he's excellent. And he's running, and she knew it. He would have beaten her in the primary. So Cassandra, if she runs as independent, he runs as a Democrat, there won't be any primary unless somebody opposes him, and they'd be crazy to do it because the party's getting behind him. So what you'd have is you'd have Ruben Gallego, you'd have Kyrsten Sinema as an independent, and then either Carrie Lake or Blake Masters. Now, Carrie Lake and Blake Masters are a few bricks short of a load. I mean, these people come walking into the room, and it gives you the willies. I mean, you can't expect someone's going to win if you're a Republican, where people kind of get the shivers every time they look at them and think about them, some of the crazy stuff they've said. So then it'll come down to Ruben Gallego and to Kyrsten Sinema. Now, Kyrsten Sinema, in my mind, in a lot of people's minds, when she knifed voting rights, that would have taken care of gerrymandering. It would have taken the independent state legislature theory. We're taking care of all this stuff. She knifed it. She knifed it. So did Manchin. And this is a secondary issue. She knifed tax reform. As a result of her, hedge funds aren't going to pay income taxes. And we've been talking about making them pay income taxes for years. Why shouldn't they pay income taxes? They get something like 2% of the net of the total assets of the money under management. And then they'll get another 1.5% of anything over the S&P 500 in their returns. And if they take big bets and they lose half the money, they still get 2%. They make hundreds of millions of dollars a year, billions in some cases. They don't pay income tax, thanks to Kyrsten Sinema. I don't want her in there. Now, a lot of people say, oh, but isn't the Democratic Party screwed? No, we're not. She went to Schumer and she said, I want to keep my committee assignments designated by Democrats. And Schumer wisely said, sure. Why? Because she's going to have to either A, vote for him for majority leader, or B, not vote, or C, vote for herself or for another independent. Either way, the vote would be 50 Democrat, 49 Republican, and we get it. Or if she votes with us, it's 51 Democrat, 49 Republican, and we get it anyway. You see what I'm saying? Now, we are getting behind Ruben Gallego 100%. We have two other independents in the Senate. We have Angus King of Maine and Bernie Sanders of Vermont. They're both independents. They don't say they're Republicans, but they vote with the Democrats. They don't say they're Democrats, but they vote with the Democrats 100%, and they have committee assignments. So she's going to slip in that way. And basically, the reason that's important is before it was 50-50 on the committees. If it's 50-50, Kamala Harris can't break ties on committees. So you couldn't issue subpoenas. It takes a majority to issue a subpoena. You couldn't do much. Well, with Fetterman winning in Pennsylvania and all of other incumbents holding, we have 51. So she goes, okay, I'm jumping ship. Okay, bye. Good riddance. We still have 50. The Republicans only have 49. So we're going to get the majorities on the committee either way. And she said, can I keep my committee assignments? Why not? Otherwise, she'll appoint herself on these committees as an independent. Nobody's tricked or fooled by that. We are not screwed because she did this. She did it, basically, she's afraid of Ruben Gallego. You know what she did? She went around Arizona. She went to Phoenix. They said, get out of here. She went to Rattlesnake County. They hissed at her and said, get out of here. That's why it's Rattlesnake County. This is the kind of stuff they do. And she is basically a wanderer right now. I mean, she's going to roam around. Who's going to support her? Not a lot of Democrats. They'll get behind Ruben Gallego. And what Republicans? Well, it's true that Blake Masters and Carrie Lake aren't going to get much support because they're nuts. But are Republicans going to vote for Kyrsten Sinema when she's an independent? You know, maybe she'll get some votes. But remember something. If you have three people in a primary, and it's not a primary, three people in a general election, what you're going to have is something like 34, 33, 33. That's what I think it's going to come down. I think Ruben has a good chance. So thanks all for calling. We're going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. To Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going right to the lines. Randy's on the line. Randy, my friend, thanks for calling. What's on your mind today, Randy?
Good afternoon. I almost feel sorry that Sinema did not switch to the Republican Party because it would give me a chance to recycle two of my favorite political jokes. And to give a little background, in 1973, which was the big Watergate year. We were having all the hearings, and that's all everybody was talking about. John Connally of Texas switched from the Democrat to the Republican Party. And that caused one commentator to say, that's the first known instance of a rat swimming out to a sinking ship. One other said, in switching parties, he raised the IQ of both parties.
Yeah, those are great, Randy. You know, yeah, the I think she is desperate. I mean, that's the only way I can put it. She is not going to win a primary in Arizona. When she stuck a knife in voting rights, she stuck a knife in voting rights and people are being harassed at the polls. And in Texas, they're being intimidated by criminal sanctions for actually voting. People are being put in jail if they're a day late, if they're a day before their parole is up and they vote, that kind of thing. She stuck a knife in that, and she stuck a knife in making hedge funds pay income taxes. Why shouldn't they pay income taxes? You pay them. I pay them. Calvin pays them. Everybody pays them. So you pay income taxes. They don't pay income taxes, and because of her. And she and Manchin wouldn't suspend the filibuster. You know, and what I say to them is, look, guys, okay, if you want to be pious about this and don't want to generally suspend it, fine. But Moscow Mitch suspended it for Supreme Court appointments and for cabinet appointments when he was the majority leader. Moscow Mitch did. So if they're suspending it, why don't we suspend it for voting rights? And they wouldn't do it. They were sanctimonious. Oh, we want to be bipartisan. Well, no, they didn't want to be bipartisan. She wanted contributions from Wall Street on the hedge fund stuff. And on the, I have no idea, I mean, why she didn't vote for voting rights, because frankly, it was popular, 70% of the vote, even in Arizona and West Virginia. But that's the way it was. So, you know, there you have it. She was afraid she'd lose a primary. She knew she'd lose a primary. This way, she's going to scramble as an independent. It's hard to win as an independent. Lisa Murkowski did it in Alaska about two cycles ago, I think about 12 years ago. But Lisa Murkowski's father, Frank Murkowski, was the governor and senator up there and wildly popular. It's a wildly popular name up there. And we have a Democratic governor in Kentucky, tough state, but his father was governor and wildly popular. So who's Kyrsten Sinema? You know, I mean, she's not wildly popular and none of her ancestors were wildly popular. She's going to go around to Phoenix and Rattlesnake and they're going to go, oh, well, I don't know. I don't know. So that's what's happened. That is flat out what's happened. And I think Ruben Gallego is a good chance, because if they put up Blake Masters or Kari Lake and Kyrsten Sinema, and what? And then they have Ruben Gallego, I think he can win. I think he will win. Okay, we're going back to the lines. Wisco Paul, my friend. Thanks for calling Western Mind today. Wisco Paul.
Oh, happy Friday to you, Mike. I mean, Matt, excuse me.
Sure, thanks.
I just want to put a plug in for Civic Media here. It's you guys always try to get the truth out there, especially your show. Of course, I'm kind of addicted to it. So it's nice to hear friends I know calling, like Andy from Beaver Dam. But I got a quick question today. Is the international government or world, are we just going to sit around and watch Russia lob rockets and missiles into Ukraine during the winter? I just can't imagine doing things like that. I don't understand Putin. I don't understand NATO or anything, because it just doesn't make any sense why they can't stop this guy from it actually is genocide. It's worse than that. So that's my question today, Matt, and have a great day.
Thanks very much, Paul. And let me pick up on that, because that is, frankly, maybe the most important issue facing the world right now. Putin is a sadist. He's a genocidal sadist. He, a couple of years ago, you know, he and his autocrats steal 80% of the surplus wealth of Russia, 80. They're worth hundreds of billions of dollars. And people know it, and they get restive. So he, believe it or not, and this was something that I talked about on a show recently, but I want to emphasize it. Before he invaded Ukraine, they had hatched a plot to invade Japan. Now, you may say, come on, they're not going to invade Tokyo. No. But there's a string of islands called the Kuril Islands, K-U-R-I-L, between Russia and Japan. And most people don't remember, in 1905, there was a Russian-Japanese war. The Tsar, trying to stay in power, because about 12 years later, the Tsar and the Tsarina and their kids were all murdered in the revolution. He decided to invade Japan, and he went there. And the Japanese, they were much bigger, you know, the Russians were a much bigger outfit and all that. It's sort of like Croatia and Brazil in soccer. Croatia just upset Brazil. Well, the Japanese beat the Russians in the Russo-Japanese War in 1905. They hate each other. And then, of course, there was World War I and World War II. The Kuril Islands, Japan claims the southern Kuril Islands, and Russia claims all of the Kuril Islands. So the southern Kuril Islands are occupied by Russia, but Japan claims them. Now, Japan hasn't done anything about it because they were so weakened after the Second World War, they couldn't. But Russia planned about a year and a half ago to just send more troops there and resolve it by military force. What decided them not to do it was they're afraid of the Japanese. They couldn't use nuclear weapons because of the United States, and they were afraid they'd be beaten by the Japanese. So then they looked around, and this is from informants in the FSB, which is the successor to the KGB. They said, we have to go in somewhere. People know we're stealing 80% of the wealth in this country, and we're getting more autocratic. Well, what about Ukraine? You know, we went into Georgia, and nobody said anything about it. And we took the Crimea in 2014 from Ukraine. Nobody, you know, nobody said anything about it. Obama didn't say anything, and neither did Trump. So therefore, Biden won't do anything, and we'll go in and take Ukraine, and it'll take about a week. And they went in on the 24th, and the Ukrainians are magnificent, and they beat them, and they're beating them. But what Russia is doing is essentially destroying the country, all the infrastructure. It's below zero in Ukraine right now. It's not below zero in Milwaukee, but it's below zero in Ukraine. And they are bombing electrical grids, hospitals, sewer systems, water. People are living underground. And Paul's point is one that's occurred to me a lot. Why don't we just do a lot more about it than we're doing right now? And I have friends who said we should just go in and nuke Moscow and do it right now. They are animals, not all the people. I met some of these people when I was in Moscow and St. Petersburg in 1997 with a delegation from the Justice Department. We were giving talks on our constitutional system and our civil and criminal legal system. But that was the era of glasnost, the thaw between Russia and the United States. I don't think that's a good idea. The Russians are disorganized. I think a lot of their nuclear sites are in disrepair. But even if they launch a few nuclear weapons, you know, one will get to L.A., one will get to New York, one will get to Paris, London, Berlin, Rome. Can't have that. But what I think, and at 2020 hindsight's great, when Russia went in, Biden did a masterful job putting together NATO and putting together the Congress to let him send arms over there. And that was not a foregone conclusion, because France and Germany are afraid of Russia, and they try to temporize. And the right wing of the Republican Party attacked Biden, stabbed him in the back, Trump. Trump said that Putin's a genius. Back in February, he said that, for getting all that real estate for $2 in sanctions. Crooked Mike Pompeo said that he respects Vladimir Putin. And all of the right wingers kept attacking Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson is pro-Russia. They play Tucker Carlson's show on Russian TV frequently. We have all these traitors, and we can't arrest them. If they were a declaration of war, like with the Nazi Germany, and they did that, we would arrest them. Okay. If I were Biden, 2020 hindsight's great. It's easy for me to say. Early on, I would have sent planes to Ukraine and told Russia there's a no-fly zone over Ukraine. I do not think Putin would have started a nuclear war over our putting in a no-fly zone. We did it in Syria. Why not Ukraine? Secondly, it's too late to do that now. I would give the Ukrainians 180-mile HIMAR missiles. We've only given them 50-mile HIMAR missiles. They've got to be able to take out all the bases, some in Russia, not civilian targets, that are sending bombers to bomb their water systems and their grid system. And they've got to be able to take out the Black Sea fleet of the Ruskies that are launching these kinds of missiles. The other thing I would do is the Ruskies have $300 billion on deposit in our banks, confiscated. Use it to rebuild Ukraine and arm them. The Europeans have $300 billion in their banks, and they've said they're going to do the same thing. Third, declare Russia a terror state, like North Korea or Iran, and put real sanctions against them, not just three-quarter sanctions, but basically embargo all their banks, not just some of their banks. And finally, sanction all of their, any Russian citizen, not just a handful of autocrats and Putin and his girlfriend, but every one of them. Now, the average Rusky does not have a bank account in the United States or Europe. They're lucky to pay the bills. But their businesses, their crooks, their thieves, quite a few of them over there. When I gave these talks back in 1997, well, I was impressed. These prosecutors in rural areas of Russia made $600 a month. They were lawyers. And they had death threats all the time, and so did their families. These were great people. They stood up to it. These are the kind of people we want to see back in power in Russia. But for the time being, we're letting tennis players come to New York and compete in the USO. Are you kidding me? We want no Ruskies, and we want no Belarusians. We don't want no commie Ruskies. We don't want them anywhere in the West. Now, I also would give them Patriot missiles. Patriot missiles are defensive missiles that can shoot down any one of these missiles coming in. And the fear is that Russia will capture them, they'll be sold in the black market. I get all that. But we can have Patriot missiles mounted in Poland and Romania, which have borders with Ukraine, to shoot down these missiles. And we can be a lot more aggressive. Biden is a very smart guy and a great president, and he is doing as much as he can without Germany and France betraying us and jumping ship. Remember, the Nazis invaded Russia and killed millions of people in the 1940s, and Napoleon and the French invaded Russia 200 years ago and killed a lot of people. There's some very sensitive feelings over there. And the Germans, they routinely say, we're sending tanks and all this. Turns out, well, but we don't make the ammunition anymore. It's made in Switzerland. Switzerland won't send anything to Ukraine. The Swiss are unbelievably bad. The Swiss won't let wounded Ukrainians be treated in Swiss hospitals because they're, quote, neutral, end quote. So Russia and Switzerland are doing good cop, bad cop. Germany and Switzerland. The Germans say, we're going to send all this stuff, but unfortunately, there's no ammo for it. Who makes it? The Swiss. Well, they won't sell the ammo or even give it. I'm getting carried away. Russia is a genocidal, sadistic state. In my judgment, it can't survive in history. There's 144 million people who are squatters on 11 time zones of gas and oil. They've got to be eliminated as a country, but it can't be done through nuclear war. We'll talk about that some other time. Calvin Sigelman, I got to go to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Director. Well, lines are open, 844-967-2789. No, I'm going to say two things this segment. I'm going to set out a horror story from the Republican Party, and then I am going to give a solution for the Republican Party in the state. The horror story, there's a guy named Tom Tillis, T-I-L-L-I-S, senator from North Carolina. And as you know, one senator can hold up any bill. Or they wiggle their pinky and they go, I hold it up. And that's the end of that. No kidding. Got to get rid of that. This bill that he's holding up and won't let anybody even vote on is called the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. And what it says, basically, a very simple bill, says if you have pregnant workers and you're at a company that is over a certain size, you've got to provide for bathroom breaks, stools for them to sit on, and water bottles. Seems pretty reasonable to me. Pregnant women are a treasure of this country. And it's sad that when they have to work, but they do have to work, for the love of God, let them at least sit on a stool. Let them go to the bathroom and not monitor it and ration them to once every half hour or something. And give them water. And Tom Tillis of North Carolina has said, well, that's state intrusion, federal intrusion. He won't even let them vote on it. I'm tired of that rule, real tired. But here is the solution for the Democratic, for the Republican Party. And then I'm going to go to the lines because I see somebody in the lines and I will get to the lines. This Saturday, the Republicans are going to vote on a state chairman. And this is heretical. I'm not in the business of giving them advice that would help them, but this would help the state. Their first vice chair is a guy named Gerard Randall. I know Gerard Randall because back about 15 years ago, Mark Belling, a very conservative talk show host, but a guy who's sort of a straight shooter, he says, he'll attack Republicans as well as Democrats, had a show where we'd have two Democrats and two Republicans, and we would debate issues. Gerard Randall is one of the Republicans. I was one of the Democrats. Gerard Randall's a decent guy. He's jolly and merry, affable. People like him. He's honest, and he isn't nuts. They are likely to elect somebody this Saturday who looks like he walked into a Star Wars cocktail party with horns, three eyes, and maybe tentacles for arms. That's the kind of people they have. And he'll give everybody the shivers. And then you have Scott Walker busting unions. You have, Thomas Tiffany. There was a resolution to condemn QAnon, and he voted against it. They are people who are election deniers. They're people who suppress the vote. They have a very bad reputation. They're for commie government. If they elected Gerard Randall, he was the first vice chair. They're thinking of having it a compensated post. He might need that. They would have somebody who people liked, who was human. He's very conservative. I mean, you know, but why do they always have to have somebody who kind of slithers into the room? So that is my suggestion. They will undoubtedly reject my suggestion. But there you have it. They have a guy named Gerard Randall, whom people generally like and respect, even though he's quite conservative. See what happens. Andy of Beaver Dam, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind, Andy of Beaver Dam?
Well, Matt, your show is opinion, but what you're speaking about in the last 3 or 4 minutes is truth. With these Republicans, everybody can see it, and it's just idiotic with there. But I just wanted to have a shout back to Wisco Paul. He is a great guy. unfortunately, he never met you at the Roman coin like I did, because you're a guy of stature and wisdom. It didn't probably hurt that you had a father professor, but it's we both love your show, and
thank you.
I don't know. Hats off to you. That's all I can say. I know we like to stick to the issues and so forth, but it goes beyond that. I feel a kinship or a friendship with you, having met you and whatever. And you're a great guy. So all the people that call in, Jeannie from Eau Claire and Mark from the SAC and Dick from Madison and everybody who I've met, you know, you're an institution, you know, and you're doing a hell of a job, and I'm glad you're on in the afternoon. So,
well, Andy, thank you so much for saying that. That means a lot to me. You and I have talked a lot. We've met, and I'm deeply, deeply grateful for your following the show and calling in, and your comments are always right on the spot. So thank you very much. Gina Beauclair, my friend, thanks for calling us. You were just given a shout-out by Andy of Beaver Dam. Gina Beauclair.
Well, I want to give him a shout-out, too. I mean, you've got fantastic people that share and provide insight. And, you know, and they have a great leader, Matt, and that's you. You do a wonderful job. This is like group therapy, let me tell you. We're watching all this horrifying things going on in our goddamn country, and we're all helpless. So at least we're able to give our opinion somewhere, and maybe by some osmosis or something, some of those idiots, it might sink in, and especially the ones from Wisconsin when you bring up Tiffany. I'm sitting there, and I got to tell you, I've been watching, you know, some of those hearings, and I got to tell you, Matt, my blood pressure goes through the roof, so then I have to shut it down whenever I hear the Republicans open their mouths. They're just as bad as they were before. You'd think after they lost, you know, the Senate and losing, you know, their footing and how awful they are. I mean, it's just unbelievable, because a lot of the good Republicans split and jumped ship a long time ago. In fact, I know I've heard recently of many Republicans in my area who did split their ticket and love Tony Evers. And these are Republicans. They don't like the crap that's going on. They don't like Trump, and they can't stand what's going on. So I think they're going to see more and more of it. But I'm really concerned, you know, about those people that are going on a Judiciary Committee. Oh, my gosh, you know, and they're nuttier than fruitcakes. They don't care about the issue. All they're going after is, well, you didn't look at the Democrat for this issue 10 years ago, and you didn't do this, and it's significant stuff with the Supreme Court justices and what they're doing right now.
Well, and, you know, listen, thank you for calling in, as always. Did you know that Jim Jordan is going to be the chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the House? Gymnasium Jim, GYM Jordan. He's already said he won't confirm a single Biden appointment. Now, judicial appointments are confirmed in the Senate, not the House. But what he can do is start investigations, and he can cause a lot of trouble. The guy's bad news. He shouldn't even be in Congress, much less be the chairman of a committee. And Nancy Pelosi threw him off the January 6th committee, said he couldn't serve. This guy is essentially a fugitive. Gene, thanks a lot for calling in. We're coming to the end of the show. Great show. Great callers, as always. Thank you, everybody, so much for all the kind words, but for all your very, very important insights. I appreciate it, and I hope everybody has a good weekend. Matt Flynn Direct will be back Monday, same time, same place. Signing off for today.
Hey, I will stand my ground, and I won't back down. No, I won't back down.